Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Mark and Jamal's romantic weekend will depart in 4 minutes from Platform 6. Your ride comes with a rolling countryside sunset view and a table seat ideal for playing footsie beneath. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
So what if your body has been trying to tell you something for years and nobody taught you how to listen? Today we're talking about anxiety, ADHD, relationships, and the warning signs your body gives you long before your mind catches up. Because sometimes what looks like anxiety is actually information. So welcome back to the show. Today's conversation is for anyone who has ever felt anxious, overwhelmed, exhausted, or stuck in a relationship that slowly drains the life out of them. Sammy DeMarco is here again joining us. And for most of her life, Sammy thought anxiety was simply part of who she was. She struggled with constant worry, racing thoughts, exhaustion, and self-doubt. But what she didn't know was that undiagnosed ADHD was contributing to many of the struggles she had blamed herself for her entire life. And what she also didn't realize was that while she was trying to manage her anxiety, her body was sending her warning signs about a relationship that was not healthy for her. And so today we're talking about the difference between support and obligation, how toxic relationships affect our physical health, how ADHD changed the way Sammy understood herself, and why healing sometimes begins when we finally stop blaming ourselves. Sammy, it's really good to see you again. Thank you so much for being here. Your last episode was amazing. I know people are already reaching out to you. This is awesome. How are you doing?
Good. I'm really excited to be here today, and I'm really thankful for the people that listened and for those that reached out to me. I'm like always, you know, a DM away for anybody that can relate to the things that I talk about. So I'm happy to have gotten some responses, and I'm happy to be here today.
Amazing. I want to jump right into it. I want to talk about anxiety because I know everybody, not one person doesn't struggle with it, right? But you were really anxious for a really long time. How long do you remember feeling anxious for?
My entire life. Mm-hmm. So I can remember feeling anxious going back to childhood, like being afraid to, I was like afraid to go to school because I was afraid something was going to happen to my mom. And I used to scream and cry and like not want to go into school. I would be in school and ask for the nurse's office all the time and leave. I would, you know, constantly feel so much anxiety. And as a kid, you don't know how to express that. It's like, oh, I feel anxious. Oh, I feel scared. I feel insecure. It's just a lot of like crying. I want my mom. I don't want to be away from her. You know, I don't want to be in school. And subsequently, because of that, because I was such a sensitive child, I was also in middle school, then bullied, which kind of added to the negative, you know, thoughts that were going through my head, where it was just nonstop, you know, negativity, hearing things from bullies, having criticism from my father, not getting along with him. And as I got into my teenage years, I started to have really bad stomach issues. I started to have headaches. I was 14 years old and I was diagnosed with 4 ulcers in my stomach because of the stress that I was under. And my parents, like my mom did what she could for me, where she put me in therapy from time to time. Like I went to guidance counselors, but the overall theme of my life had always been anxiety, fear, like feeling too emotional, feeling like I am so overwhelmed that I want to jump out of my body is the way that like I can describe, you know, feeling for most of my life, and constant racing thoughts. And it didn't get better when I got into college, because I had mentioned in the previous episode that I got married really young when I was 20, and then I moved to Texas to a really culty Bible school. And there, mental health was looked at as a spiritual issue, as something that was demonic, something that was, you know, not of God, was indicative of a lack of faith in, you know, God. And so now I'm already dealing with this chronic anxiety that I've always had. I've got so much negative messaging that I've received throughout my life. And then throw on top of that, now I'm trying to show that I have faith and that I'm being a faithful Christian, but I have so much anxiety that I now believe that there's something demonic going on, that, you know, I don't have enough faith in God, that I've done something wrong. And in the churches that I was in, they don't believe in mental health care. So I was discouraged from going to see a doctor for medication. If you took medication, it was a lack of faith. If, you know, you went and saw a secular psychiatrist, that was considered a lack of faith. You should only go to therapy in the church. And so my mental health just worsened as, you know, I went out throughout my life. And when I met my ex-husband, I actually thought for the first time, I finally like met somebody that understood what I was going through and was patient with me. And he told me that he had anxiety and he dealt with anxiety issues as well. And so for me, I was like, this is incredible. I finally have somebody that understands what I'm going through. And it seemed for the first half of our relationship that he really did understand. He was supportive. He was there for me. If I had panic attacks, he would hold me, hug me, and, you know, do the things that I would tell him would help me. And then it was right after we got married, everything switched. And suddenly my anxiety was an issue. And suddenly it was a burden. And I could ask him, you know, can I talk to you? Can I have a hug? And it might not be like, no, you can't, but you know that you're not being supported. You get the eye rolls and the, oh, fine, not again. To where I just, again, went back to feeling like something's wrong with me. I'm the problem, right. You know, whereas I didn't feel that way about him at first when I was with him. I thought, finally, somebody that sees me, you know? And then right after we got married, it was back to, oh, I'm the problem. My anxiety is a problem. Like, if I have a panic attack, that's a problem. And
I would love to ask you, though, like more about the childhood stuff, and then we can get more into the relationship, because you were also struggling with the ADHD. And I mean, I know, like, as a child, it's hard to understand that, like, you think that what you're dealing with is kind of like what everyone else is experiencing too, right? Like, did you think that this was just the way life was supposed to be? So what was it like living every day with anxiety and ADHD and not knowing where it was coming from?
It was a constant feeling of there being something wrong with me. Like, I was very acutely aware that I was different than my peers. I was very acutely aware that, like, I was more sensitive. And a lot of times, like, for girls, the ADHD gets missed in childhood because it doesn't look the way it looks in boys with so much of the hyperactivity and the bouncing all over the place. A lot of times with girls, we internalize it. And so it becomes things that we strive harder to do better. You know, we try to make up for what we can't seem to naturally do. We try to do more to get half the result. And that creates all that anxiety that you feel, all that pressure that I felt. So I grew up feeling constant pressure, feeling constantly like I wasn't enough and like I was too much all at the same time.
Right. That's so difficult. And then eventually you were diagnosed with ADHD. Do you remember what that feeling was like when you finally received a diagnosis, and did life suddenly make sense to you? Because I know you were also treated for it and that changed your life completely.
Yeah. So that was actually only about 5 years ago that I was diagnosed with ADHD. So I went my whole life just not knowing that this was what was going on with me. and feeling like there's something wrong with me. I just can't cope with anxiety, and I don't know what my problem is. I go to therapy, I take my medication, I do what I'm supposed to do, and yet I'm still anxious. And I actually had realized about 5 years ago, I brought up to my doctor that I didn't think that what I was dealing with was just anxiety. And I told her, I said, there's something very wrong with the fact that I've been through so many traumatic events in my life, and I've been able to work through them in therapy and learn how to cope. But when it comes to like day-to-day life and keeping up with the laundry and cooking and cleaning and my schedule and not running late, these things send me into complete meltdowns and complete panic attacks where I am just like so burdened down by it. I don't feel like I adult like the rest of my friends, like I feel like I can't do it. And my doctor had said, have you been tested for ADHD before? And I was like, no, like I wasn't a hyper child. And like, it's not always hyper children, And so she had put me on medication for ADHD, and she's like, let's just try this, because she was my PCP at the time, so she couldn't get me completely tested yet. So she's like, we're gonna try this at a low dose and just see if this helps, because it's very easy that like if a stimulant medication calms your anxiety, it's a pretty good sign that ADHD is the culprit. And I remember when I first took the medication, I was nervous about it because I was expecting it to make me more anxious. And I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna end up in the emergency room with a panic attack. But I took the medication, and I remember that I was sitting at my computer working, and all of a sudden I looked up and I was like, oh my God, my mind is quiet. And my mind had never been quiet in my life. Like I can't, I know, I didn't know it was possible to not have something going on in your mind. I didn't know it was possible for there to be silence in there, because my brain was always like 10 different thoughts going on at once, and now suddenly it was silent, and I could think one thing at a time and focus on one thing at a time. And I remember sitting there and I started to cry, because I was like, oh my God, it could have been so much easier for so much longer if somebody had noticed that this was what was going on, that this wasn't just anxiety, that it wasn't, just a response to different traumas and stuff, that there had been something going on, since childhood. So there was like a little bit of grief that came with it, because I was like, I thought a little bit about, man, what could have been, if somebody had noticed and if I could keep up and I was able to have my symptoms treated. But then like it really, as I learned more about what ADHD actually is and the way that it affects executive functioning and the way that it affects how you manage time and perceive time, even the way that for me, because I did eventually get tested, the way that it affects my auditory processing time and my visual processing time, it affects so many different things. Even the fact that I'm clumsy and I drop things and I bump into things all the time, these are all things that are related to my ADHD that I would always put myself down. Like, what's wrong with you, Samantha? Why are you bumping into these things? What's wrong with you that you can't keep up with the time? What's wrong with you that you're always running late? What's like, and it's always like, what is wrong with you that you can't, do things like normal people do? And, you're lazy, you're a quitter, you don't finish what you start, and just so many things that I would put myself down for. And I realized these were not for lack of trying. It wasn't for lack of trying that I was, that I run late. It's not for lack of trying that I start something and then struggle to finish it. Like that is part of the way that my brain processes things, and my brain goes where the dopamine is. And as soon as the dopamine wears off on a project I'm doing, my brain's like, all right, what else do we have going on here? But I didn't know any of that. And so I just thought there were things wrong with me. So I was finally able to start having some compassion for myself and say, like, okay, I need to figure out ways that my I can use what I know about my ADHD and my symptoms to my advantage so that I can still be productive and still live, a fulfilled life. And I was able to start putting a lot of those things into practice after my divorce, because when I was diagnosed with ADHD in my marriage, my ex was like, "It's an excuse. You just want there to be an excuse for you to be lazy. Like, you just want to make up excuses for why you can't do things." So anytime I would suggest something that would get the same result done, but make it easier on me for my ADHD, it was like, "No, why would you do that when you could just, do it yourself?" Like, for example, I could work overtime at my job, and so I had said, "I'm struggling to keep up with cleaning the house all the time. So instead, I'd rather work 2 hours of overtime and pay somebody to come like once every week or two and help me out, because I can lock in really easily for an hour or two and like work a little bit more. But for me to switch tasks and then go to cleaning and then do all that, it's much harder." And it was like, "Why would you do that when you can just like clean yourself? Why would you waste money on that when you can just clean yourself?" And it's like,
Right.
never crossed my mind that he could clean too. But like, it was just, why would you make those concessions for yourself? Now I make concessions for myself. Like, I don't like going to the grocery store. I get overstimulated. I hear, like, I'm very sensitive to sound. So when I hear all different noises going on and all different lights that are flashing, it gets me really overstimulated, and that can drain your battery really quickly. And so I don't go grocery shopping anymore. I don't go to the store. I use Instacart. It costs me an extra $25, but it saves me so much in the mental energy that I don't have to spend in going to the store. And then the same thing, like I don't like cooking. There's so many steps involved. My ADHD brain doesn't like it. And so instead of eating out every night, or instead of eating unhealthy and microwavable meals, I get pre-prepared meals from, my local store that I just have to stick in the oven, and it costs $1 more, $2 more than a meal would have cost me otherwise. But in total, I'm saving myself hours of time a week just by doing two simple things for myself when it comes to like specific areas of weakness that I have with my ADHD, so that I can support myself.
Absolutely. What, like, so you going back to your relationship, your ex was super supportive with your struggles before you got married. And then all of a sudden, you guys get married and he's not supporting you and basically blaming you for, having anxiety and all of this stuff. What do you think changed? And like, how can someone tell the difference between genuine support and someone simply just like going through the motions? Like, can you explain to us what happened there?
Yeah, like I was so confused by it at the time. I couldn't completely tell you like what happened, other than the fact that prior to us getting married, like he had a reason to like really keep up with like keeping the mask on and playing the supportive role, because you don't want me to then not. You don't want to break up. You don't want to lose the relationship. So obviously, a lot of times when you're dealing with a situation that becomes abusive, it doesn't start that way. Like, women don't go into relationships with guys that treat them terribly, and like, it just starts off that way. It starts off with
Right.
them being supportive. It starts off with those things. I'm not him, so I can't tell you exactly what changed in his mind that flipped the switch. But what I noticed was that when my mom got sick shortly after our wedding, and my attention was on her and not on him all of the time, he became a lot more short-tempered with me. Like, after we got married, everything kind of changed. And I remember at one point he said to me, like, "We're married now. You're like a representation of me." And so I really feel like it became like in his head, where me having a panic attack, he looked at as weakness. And so he didn't want to see that weakness in him and that weakness in me. You know, so then it became a constant burden. And what happens then is you make the anxiety worse, because anxiety, a lot of feeling, most feelings, intense feelings, they pass through your system, they say within 90 seconds, unless it's re-triggered. If it's re-triggered, then that chemical is released again and you're going to continue to feel those feelings. So when you have somebody that's having a panic attack and they need to calm down, like, it is going to pass, but you need support during that time. You need like a hug, compression, you need something. But when you have someone that's like, what is wrong with you? Why can't you just like pull together? Stop crying. Like, you have nothing to be crying about. This is ridiculous. You're hearing those words and you're already feeling anxious. And now it's like, you're right, I'm ridiculous. What's wrong with me? Why can't I get it together? And I remember my mom saying to me, like, I feel like he's making your mental health worse.
Yeah.
You know, like, she's like, he's complaining about your anxiety, but he knew all of this before you guys got married. So what is the deal now? You know, but I think that's just the way things work in a cycle where you're dealing with somebody who is, you know, abusive and who deals with coercive control and whatnot. Like, he can't control my anxiety.
And a lot of self-esteem issues, right? Like, so if the attention wasn't on him, it was the end of the world, right?
Yeah. And my attention was on my mom, who was sick at the time. And we'll talk about in a future episode. But I mean, like, he had literally said to me at one point, you know, I'm not resentful of your mom for being sick, but I'm resentful of the circumstances because it's put our life on hold. And I'm like, whose life is on hold? Like, mine is still going, but it's a nightmare right now. And I'm dealing with my mom. Like, there's nothing that is paused right now about life. Like, we are in like a emergency mode of life where we all need to come together and actually take action. So what's paused here? But for him, it was because him and I weren't together all the time. We weren't buying a house. We weren't doing all of the things that make you look like a successful couple that just got married.
Right.
We had to be focused on helping with my mom's health, you know, and especially because I was her medical power of attorney, there were a lot of times that I had decisions to make and I had papers to sign and had to be at the hospital, you know. And the crazy thing, though, about ADHD is we tend to be really good in an emergency situation. So when it came to my mom being sick, myself and my entire family were all floored by the way I handled it, because I was just like, okay, get into gear. This is what we got to do for mom. This is what we got to take care of. Like, just held myself together and did everything that needed to be done to make sure my mom was okay. And it wasn't until like after she was okay and out of the woods that I just then fell apart from like everything that had happened, you know? And then at that point, I was dealing with my ex then telling me, like, your mom is out of the hospital now. What are you crying about? What are you freaking out about? Like, you can't, like, live, like, you can't be crying about this all the time. And it's like, geez, I'm processing trauma. Like, that's what I'm crying about. And
well,
eventually,
you did mention, like, he also had issues with you going out and doing things, like, your Backstreet Boys, like your love for the boy bands, like he had an issue with you doing basically anything. So again, I think it comes down to that needing the attention, and when the attention wasn't on him, it was a problem for him.
The boy band stuff was something too that was helpful with my anxiety. Like, it was kind of crazy the way he'd be so mad about me having anxiety, but also be mad about the things that were helpful distractions from the anxiety. So it was just absolutely insane.
Yeah, that's quite a cycle. I know you talked about your body kind of reacting before you were able to make sense of the anxiety and ADHD and what was happening to you. So you said you experienced headaches and stomach issues and you were constantly getting sick. So at the time, what did you think was causing all of that? And looking back now, what do you think your body was trying to tell you?
When I was a teenager, it was like harder because basically when they couldn't like find like an exact cause of like everything that was going on, like when they found the ulcers in my stomach, My mom was just like, yeah, that's the stress from her father and the stuff that like he's been putting me through and everything. When I got older, the doctors thought maybe that I was having asthma attacks because I would be short of breath and everything like that. I thought that I constantly had headaches, so I always like think of the worst case scenario. I would always think of like the worst case scenario of things that could potentially be going wrong with me. And as an adult, the same thing. Like I would constantly get sick. I had my immune system was just shot. Like somebody could sneeze within a mile of my vicinity and I was going to get sick from it, you know? And it was just my body screaming for relief from all of the stimulation that was going on both outside and around me and then inside my brain. And our bodies, even when we say like our body will tell us before like our mind even catches up, this even goes for like in relationships, especially like when you start to feel like uncomfortable, like if you're in a relationship and your heart drops and you get nervous when your significant other gets home, like that's a sign your body is sending to you, you know, when you start feeling those little twinges of anxiety. When you don't say something because you think that they might respond in a way that blows up. And so you feel that hesitation in you. Like that is your body telling you something is not right. And to even go a step further, like in my marriage at one point or for a while, like I became really uninterested in sex. And I thought there was something wrong with me, you know, that like, I'm like, this must be because of the things of my past, because of what I experienced. I would talk about it in therapy. I would do everything that like I was trying to do to make myself feel better. But what it ultimately came down to was that my body was letting me know that this was not a safe person to be intimate with, that he wasn't safe. And my body knew that before my mind knew that. And so every time I would flinch or pull back or, you know, say like, no, I'm not in the mood, like I would feel genuine anxiety when I would think about having to be intimate. And I thought it was a me issue, but the issue was really the way that he treated me. And there were many times where I would tell him, you know, like, I feel like we'll be intimate and a day later you're screaming at me again. Like that makes me just like feel used, you know? And he would take that and, oh, I'm so sorry. And this, and it would happen again. So eventually my body is just like, you know, anxiety, fear, I'm not interested. And I thought the problem was me, but the problem was not me.
Absolutely. How did you get clarity on that in the relationship? I mean, you were medicated for the ADHD, but were you and your ex still together at that time?
So my ex and I were still together when I was diagnosed with the ADHD, but I feel like that was the beginning of like me really opening my eyes and being able to see things for what they were. Because once I got on the medication, I wasn't having 10 thoughts coming through my head at one time and trying to make sense of them all. Like I had clarity at that point. I could think through things one thing at a time. And I began to see the cycles in the relationship of what was happening and where like there would be a buildup and there'd be like the sarcasm or the snide remarks or just like the sighs and rolled eyes and all those like little microaggressions. And then there would be a huge blow up of him screaming at me, cursing at me. And then there would be an apology the next morning. And then the cycles would just continue to repeat. And I realized this is not normal. And this is not just me. Like, I am trying to be very rational now about like how I think we can move forward. I even like had a little small journal where I wrote things down where I was like, listen, I get it. Like, you married me thinking I was one person and you got something else. That's what I thought about myself because now he has a wife who has these issues with anxiety, with ADHD, and whose mom passed away. So she's got trauma and grief. I'm like, I get it. You That's not what you signed up for, but this is what you got. So either like we have to find a way to move forward and, be okay with who each other is. And I remember like writing out, like, I might not be the best at keeping up with cooking and cleaning, but I can, account for that by doing this. And it was like me, like looking at all my shortcomings, trying to find ways that I can account for it in hopes that that would like make the relationship better. And even that, he just like, his eyes at, and I started to realize like he does not care at all, like whether things got better with us. And I remember like starting to go. It was that same year that AJ from the Backstreet Boys did a tour with Joey from NSYNC, and I started going to the shows where, my friend and I went to the one by my house in New Jersey. Then we went to Jacksonville to go to the show by her. And I remember I started going to those shows thinking, like, if he's going to be so indifferent, I'm at least going to do the things that bring me joy. Like I'm at least going to like do some things that make me happy and everything if I have to live with, this way. And being at those shows and doing all that stuff is like where I started rediscovering myself again and where I started to think like I don't want to shrink back down when I go home. Like I don't want to have to be somebody that I'm not. I don't want to have to pretend that I don't have, ADHD and it doesn't affect me. I don't want to pretend that my brain like thinks the way that everybody else's does. I don't want to pretend I didn't have a good time at a Backstreet Boys concert, like I just didn't want to go home and pretend anymore.
Yeah, that's like a huge contrast because I was in a relationship before where even after a work day, it was like driving home gave me anxiety. Walking in the front door gave me anxiety because I felt like I couldn't be fully myself. Yet I thought that that was just normal and it was just something that I had to adjust with and that it was just my anxiety. But that is a huge, like a
It's
huge
a
tell.
huge
Is if you're
sign.
struggling to go back home where it's supposed to be like your safe haven and you're having a hard time doing that, that's a big sign.
Yeah, it's a huge sign. And you really like, you have to pay attention to the things that your body is saying. It might be scary because, like, I get it. I loved my ex. I think there's probably a part of me that will still always have love for him. Like, we were together for 10 years. And so, like, I knew him, I knew like why in some ways he was behaving the way that he was. It didn't make it like any easier, but even in that, in understanding like, okay, he had some things that he went through, my body was telling me that doesn't matter. Like, you're not in an emotionally safe place, even though you have empathy for him, he's not having the same empathy for you. And I know that you love him, but he's not loving you properly, and it's hard to come to that realization of he's not really loving me. Like what he's doing is not love. And this anxiety that I'm feeling is not normal in a healthy relationship. Like your body doesn't get anxious to see your significant other in a normal relationship. Like in a healthy relationship, you normally are excited to see each other, or at least happy to see each other, or maybe you're just content in seeing each other, but very rarely are you anxious to see the other person unless there is something toxic going on.
Yeah, 100%. So you kind of knew this, like you had a journal, and within 6 months of your relationship, you were writing these little things down. Is there a difference between knowing and acting on something, or what do you think caused you to stay? And then what finally gave you the courage to choose yourself and leave that relationship?
Yeah. So, like looking back in my journal, there were a lot of things where I wrote down that I knew that his behavior was not acceptable and that like something was wrong here. But also at the same time, I was still taking partial blame myself. So I was still saying, like, But I have to work on my anxiety too. I have to work on my crying all the time. I have to be better at this. I have to be better, at that. So in my journals, I kind of take like partial blame, but then I also, there's areas where I'm like, I don't understand why he's acting this way. Like, he knew that I had anxiety issues when we were dating, so I don't understand what has changed. Where there was just a lot of confusion in the early days, whereas now I can look at what was going on and see it with a lot more clarity when I look back and I realize those are the words of somebody who is being controlled and emotionally abused and made to believe that there was something wrong with them just being themselves,
Right.
And another common theme I saw in my journals too is like my ex, he would tell me that he had anxiety. And so he would tell me that his screaming and yelling was what happens when his anxiety is the best, gets the best of him. So why is it okay that I can be crying and having a panic attack, but when he does it, it's wrong? And it's like, because when you do it, you're abusive. Because when you do it, you scream at me, curse at me, call me names, belittle me. When I have a panic attack, I cry. Like, there's a big difference, but he would create these like false equivalencies that made me believe that, like, okay, we're both dealing with anxiety. So, like, I don't want to leave him. And then on top of that, I was dealing with my mom's illness. And so being able to say, like, okay, I'm, leaving my husband in the middle of dealing with all that wasn't even a thought in my mind. It was like a, we have to find a way to make this work. I know it's not healthy, but I got to find a way to make it work. And then when I lost my mom, it just became one of those like blocks in my mind where it was like, I don't want to lose another person that I've loved. Like, I had experienced so much grief that I, despite the fact that I was being mistreated, like, I still loved him and I still didn't want to lose, another person that
Absolutely.
I loved. And I was devastated over that. But I remember what really changed my perspective. It was just a random fight that we were having, that we were arguing over the AJ and Joey concert that I had went to. And he started screaming at me because I showed him a video of the show thinking he would like the song, because one of the guys did like Tearing Up My Heart in like a Frank Sinatra style. And my ex liked Frank Sinatra. So I'm like, oh, maybe he'll like this. I can share something that, with him. And when Joey hits a high note, the crowd cheers and I'm like, yeah, Joey. And he's like, is that you screaming in the background? And then it was like this huge argument about, how dare you be screaming for another man? I'm like, I'm at a concert. Like, that's what people do. Like, I'm a good fan, like I'm going to scream and I'm going to like cheer and everything. And I remember when I said to him, I said, I feel like at this point you're purposefully trying to push me away because it would be easier for you to lose me than for you to actually go and deal with all the things that are causing you to be this insecure. And he had said to me, you think it would be easier for me to lose half of this house, half of my paycheck, half my 401k, and like didn't say anything about me. Like, he didn't say nothing about it would be so hard to lose you or the love of my life. It was all money. And in that moment, I became angry in a way I had never been angry with him before, because it was like anger without empathy. And it was like I was suddenly seeing things very clearly. And I was like, oh, you have no desire to change and you're never going to change because you're content with our relationship being this way so long as you don't lose your money. Like, now I get
And
it.
So
this
many times we have the same arguments with the people that we love over and over and over again, just like wishing for something to change. That light bulb moment was everything for you.
That was
like
everything.
Seeing
I realized
clearly.
I realized it was not about me. It was about protecting his money. It was about protecting what he felt like he built. It was not losing half of what he had and all that. It wasn't about like, you're the love of my life. Like, I don't know how I would handle losing you, which was, the spiral going through my head for so long of how would I ever be able to like move on and live a happy life when losing the love of my life. But like in that moment when he said that, it was like the rose-colored glasses shattered and I saw everything for what it really was. I was just like, yeah, he's not going to take the extra effort to go to therapy. Like he's not going to work on his stuff. Like he's content with me doing what I want to do to go to my shows once in a while and then us having these huge blow-ups at home and having these fights. It was like that was the cost of my joy. It was like knowing that I had to deal with one of those fights.
Yeah, man, that's absolutely so many people can relate to that. I'm so glad you're talking about this stuff. Can you let us know what some signs are that someone might be losing themselves inside of a relationship?
Yeah, so it's hard to say what I wish I knew back then because, like, I wish I knew more about narcissists and how they, mirror your interests and values in the beginning and, like, all of the love bombing stuff. But, like, you don't go into a relationship thinking, like, oh, this person might be a narcissist or might be controlling or anything like that. But I wish that I would have paid a little closer attention to like the jokes that he made that were not really jokes. Like when I went to go see the Backstreet Boys in Las Vegas for my bachelorette party, one of the things he said when I was leaving was, have fun saying goodbye to your boyfriends. And I was like, oh, haha, that's really funny, right? But no, he really meant it. Like, I'm not gonna let you kind of want you to go to concerts anymore after we get married, like this is your last one. Like really have fun saying goodbye to them, And even in my journal where I talk about, he's getting more short with me. We're fighting more often before the wedding. Like I should have paid a little bit more attention to those things because the thing is that I realize that there's kind of a gaslight that happens, I think, when in relationships, when like you are in one where you're dealing with someone who's abusive, because people will say like all couples fight, all couples fight, all couples fight. So you think that these fights are normal. But I don't think all couples fight. I think all couples disagree at times. I think that they, may argue at times, but fighting involves like violent things. It involves inflicting pain or shielding yourself from receiving pain. So, like, when you're getting into constant fights that are causing you pain, when you have somebody that's belittling you, that's putting you down, where like when you say these are fighting words, you know what I mean? Like, that's not healthy. That doesn't happen in healthy relationships. People don't use fighting words in healthy relationships. They don't belittle their partner in healthy relationships. They can disagree and still get along. So if you're having these constant, fights and you think like, oh, well, all couples fight, maybe really think about what those fights look like because all couples may disagree sometimes, but all couples do not fight. Healthy couples, they don't use fighting words. They don't get aggressive. They don't get intimidating. Like, that is not a dynamic of a healthy relationship. And then the other thing is, if your body is causing you to feel anxiety around a person, pay attention to that. Like, when you don't feel right around a person, pay attention to your body. And that includes in a relationship or in any circumstance. Like, your body often reads cues and sends signals way before our brain can process any of it. And if your
100%.
body is like sending you that message that somebody is unsafe or something is unsafe, it's like that voice that tells us not to walk down a dark alley at night alone. Like we realize, oh, we shouldn't do that. That's our body letting us know, like, this is not a safe thing to do. And if you're feeling that, then you really have to start to ask yourself, am I safe in this relationship? And not just physically safe, but am I safe to be myself? Am I safe to be, to have an intimate relationship with this person, not sexually, but to let this person know me fully. Is this a safe person to like give my all to? Or is this somebody that is using the things that I share with them to basically turn against me and keep me controlled and, you know, keep me doing what they want me to do?
Yeah, absolutely. And what about, what would you say to the person listening out there who keeps telling themselves that they're too sensitive, too emotional, or too anxious, or too much? Because I know that a lot of people get told that, especially ones that are misunderstood or in toxic relationships.
No, I used to believe the same thing. And the fact of the matter is that the people that are telling you you're too much, too sensitive, or anything like that, they have something to gain from you believing that, because they don't have to take responsibility for their own behavior. Because oftentimes people will say, oh, you're too sensitive, or like you take things too personally when they do something to offend you or to hurt you. Or they'll say it as a way to like minimize, you know, what you're going through and say you're too much. But the fact of the matter is you're not too much. If you're really emotional, you're not too emotional. Your emotions are trying to tell you something. You need to listen to them. You know, there's no world where you're dealing with something in your emotions and your body, and it's not a signal trying to tell you something. So if you feel like you're too much, like stop and ask yourself, okay, wait, like what is my body trying to tell me? What's my mind trying to tell me? Because I'm not too much. I'm definitely enough. I'm not too sensitive. And if you are dealing with anxiety on a regular basis, if you are dealing with, you know, struggling with your emotions, because with ADHD comes something called rejection sensitivity dysphoria, which makes you hypersensitive to rejection, failure, or perceived rejection or failure. And you often fall apart at the slightest, you know, idea that there might be rejection or failure. So that's something that could be coming up. And if you're dealing with things like this all of the time, then you might also want to speak to like a mental health care provider if you don't already speak to somebody, because you just never know. It could be that you're in a toxic relationship. It could be that you're dealing with some kind of mental health issue. It could be a combination of both, but you want to make sure that you're getting the right help.
Yeah, absolutely. People need each other, and you never know. You definitely need to look into it and get support. No one can go through life on their own. I'm so stubborn, and I used to try and do everything on my own and for myself until the universe made me get the help. Like, it's like you get to a certain point where you can't handle it anymore, and then you have to do something about it. But don't let it get to that point, right? Like, we need to start advocating for ourselves before we get to the crisis point.
Exactly.
The last question I want to ask you, though, is how does someone begin trusting themselves again after years of questioning reality and themselves? Like, how did you begin believing in yourself again?
It takes a little bit of time. And the thing that I recommend is taking time in solitude away from the opinions of other people, because you really want to take some time, whether it's a few minutes every day, or you have, like me, you get to live alone and can spend as much time as you want in solitude, but you really get a chance to get to know yourself. And you start to trust yourself just by making little decisions for yourself here and there and starting small and just deciding this is what I want for myself, and then doing that thing for yourself and realizing, okay, I've got this. Like, for me, learning to trust myself, it was moving to Florida, which was a big move. But for me, like, that's what it felt like in my body was telling me, like, this is where I needed to be. So I'm going to trust that. But then even with little things where, you know, I made the decision to not go to the grocery store anymore because I realized how it made me super hyper, you know, overstimulated and everything like that. And so I made that decision for myself and changed the way I was doing things. It was little by little, just rebuilding on my own. It's not something that happened overnight. It happened with me spending that time in solitude, with untangling, like, what is it that other people have told me about myself, and what do I think about myself really? Like, outside of their opinions, like, what do I think about me? And once I really started to think about just the things I love about myself, the things that, make me, I started to build more confidence as I leaned into that, as I was like, you know what? These are the things that make me unique and quirky. Like, I'm leaning into it. My whole apartment's pink because I love pink. I'm always going to Backstreet Boys and boy band stuff. I'm all about like 90s nostalgia and things like that because that is just like little unique parts of me that I have confidently like displayed as part of my personality and just been like, this is me now, and I'm okay with that. And it just takes time. And it still takes time. I'm still healing. I'm still growing. I'm still learning how to trust myself and feel confident in myself. So, like, it takes time after, something like that to rebuild it, but consistency and little steps helps.
So, Samantha, what is one thing that you want listeners to remember from today's conversation? What message do you hope to get across today?
Honestly, the biggest thing is to listen to what your body is telling you around other people. If you're someone that's dealing with a lot of anxiety, if you have ADHD, if you have any kind of mental health condition, you need a solid support system. Like, you need people who are going to be on your side. And if you're in a place where you have people that are making that worse, where those relationships are putting you down for what you're going through, if you're feeling anxious in your body when you're around them, then it's really time to start second guessing those relationships and wondering if that might be one of the sources of your anxiety. And I just can't stress enough how much your body knows what's going on before your mind does. So when your body is trying to scream at you and tell you something, instead of just freaking out and like trying to say like, let me get rid of this anxiety, like stop and really ask yourself, like, what is my body telling me right now?
Yeah, that is absolutely so true. Thank you so much for being here again today and for having this conversation. It's not easy to say out loud, but I know it'll help a lot of people have that aha moment that they don't have to struggle and suffer. I really hope that people start paying attention to those signs that you so brilliantly illustrated today. Now, tell everyone more about the work that you do, where people can find you and reach out to you. Because I know you're talking to people who are going through struggles and they've already been reaching out to you.
So I am a certified life coach, and right now I am working with women that are in relationship transition. So whether you're going through a breakup, divorce, or even considering going through a divorce, if you're in that transitional period where you're thinking, I don't know who I am anymore. I don't know what I want. I don't know what to do. I work with these women to help them learn how to silence the inner critic, to learn how to build confidence and then create a life that they love. You can find me under Samantha DeMarco on LinkedIn. I'm also on Instagram at Sammy Rose Coaching and Sammy Rose 1010, and you can find me on Facebook.
Amazing. Well, thanks again for being here today. I'm really looking forward to the next episode. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you so much to our audience for tuning in. This conversation reminds us that not everything is wrong with us. Sometimes the anxiety isn't the problem, the exhaustion isn't the problem. Sometimes the constant stress, self-doubt, and physical symptoms are messages asking us to pay attention and to stop blaming ourselves. Message is asking us to trust what we already know deep down. And so Sammy's story is a powerful reminder that healing often begins with clarity. And sometimes the moment you stop fighting yourself is the moment your life finally starts changing. So next time when Sammy returns, we're going to dig deep into one of the hardest experiences that she has ever faced, and that is the loss of her mother and how grief became one of the biggest turning points in her life. So make sure you stay tuned for that. And in the meantime, take care, everybody. Bye for now.